the Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creators of the Bionic Studio, the smarter way to make radio.
Hello, I'm Stuart Clarkson. Coming up later, we've got highlights from Audio UK's Brexit Ready podcast series. Loads of tips for businesses, staff and freelancers working across the audio and radio industries on preparing for Brexit when it might happen next year. Also this time, James Cridlin reflects on the last 5 years in his final audio blog for the Radio Today programme. And David Lloyd is here with more radio moments, including memories of Roger Scott, Capital Gold and an anniversary for the Today programme on Radio 4.
Original music for this podcast was composed by Macasso.
Before all that, though, Radio Today's founder and editor Roy Martin is here. Hello, Roy. How's your week? Are you looking forward to the election?
I know, right? A general election. I love a general election. In fact, I'm having one right now.
The old jokes.
Talking
are
of Little
best.
Britain.
Yes,
that's from Little Britain. That it's back on the radio. By the time you hear this, you'll have probably heard it on Thursday night. I'm so looking forward to that.
They're never the same, though, are they? When they bring things back, it's never the same. It's never as good.
I don't know. I think it was timeless stuff, and just to catch up with all the characters and what they think of Brexit. It should be quite interesting.
Talking of Brexit, there's been lots of chat about that this week on many radio stations, not least on the UK's brand new news radio station, LBC News, which is now on the air.
Is that like a new idea? So is it rolling news or something like that? Is that what they're doing?
Apparently so, yeah. So 20 minutes of rolling news every 20 minutes. And I have listened a little bit. I listened to the launch on Monday with Lisa Aziz, and it was very good. I thought it sounded very confident. Nice new Five Now logo on the jingles.
Which stands for what?
LBC that, UK, maybe? Know? LBC UK?
Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah. But no, so I enjoyed that, and I enjoyed the kind of build up bed at 6 o'clock, getting it all clean. You know, as an anorex like that kind of thing, don't we? I thought it sounded a very confident start, and I've dipped in a little bit here and there over the first few days, and it sounds really good. It does what it says on the tin, gives you the news when you want the news. There's obviously travel and weather and business news and all that kind of stuff on there as well, but it's... if your station that you normally listen to for news is not doing news, it's worth flicking over and just getting a quick summary of what's going on and then going back. So I don't think it's going to get a lot of hours necessarily, but I think the reach might do quite well.
Probably at 20 minutes instead of hours. I think it's a great idea. I'm a big fan of the rolling news concept, and I was so shocked that it didn't exist a number of years ago that I did my own. Yeah. So it's good to see that Global are finally doing it. And I did say this in eRadio last week, that I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, somebody like News UK, it's in their name. They don't have a news radio station. So surely it's only a matter of time, especially in the current climate.
Yeah, there was a suggestion, wasn't there? Was it Chris Evans a few months ago suggested Talk Radio was going to change its name and be Talk News?
I doubt it, but yeah, who knows?
The LBC News introduction on DAB on D1 obviously meant that Radio X went to DAB+. We talked about this, I think, briefly last week, but it's now happened, and there was a bit of a backlash in terms of listeners saying, you've disappeared off my radio, I can't get you. This is the first time Global's made one of its kind of mainstream brands into DAB+. So it's yet to be seen whether it's a good idea or not.
Well, if you look at the feedback and the comments, it's a bad move, because Radio X, which is desperately trying to grow its audience, is going to lose audience unless, of course, as Chris Moyle say, they man up and buy a new radio, for goodness sake.
If you could just read some of the text messages, you'd think we'd have gone out, all of us, in the night and taken the wheels off their car.
Yeah.
Oh, well, thank you. I've been listening to Radio X for 4 years. Not anymore. I'm not buying a new radio for you. All right. Everybody calm down. So the fact you are listening to this means that you are still listening to Radio X. So can you do me a favour? If you have a friend who goes, well, I can't get Radio X anymore, my radio's not working anymore, just have a little look at it, see if they've actually not hit the retune button. And if it still doesn't work after that, maybe for Christmas, spend the £12 on a new radio for them. And maybe also get them laid, because I think they're quite backed up.
And I think we've got to bear in mind as well that clearly the people who've still got it are not going to be complaining on Facebook and Twitter about losing it. So it's a skewed opinion that you're seeing in the moaners there.
Yeah, I mean, on the tweet that went out on Friday morning, I think it was, that said we're off. So even if 100 people complain, you know, half of those will probably go and buy a better radio to carry on listening, and the other half, you know, they'll probably download the app or something. So if you really like the station, you'll go out of your way and get it. I think somebody wrote, well, that's it. I can't listen to Radio X now. I'm going to have to listen to music on my phone instead. Get the app. It's the same thing.
No, I think the comment was, I'm going to have to listen to Oasis all day on my iPhone. It was a suggestion that they just play Liam and Nolan Oasis all day long.
Ah, okay. So kind of. But yeah, just get the app. Everybody's got a phone.
Yeah, I mean, Radio X did quite well in the raid jars that were out last week. 116,000 extra listeners this quarter. So 1.7 million now. Chris Moyles, 975,000, up 50,000 year on year. So it has been doing quite well over the last few months. So we'll see how that's affected by the move to DAB Plus when we get some more Rajar figures. So talking of Rajar, Zoe Ball, down a million listeners now since taking over the show, since those first Rajars at the start of the year.
Can I just say, she still has more listeners than Terry Wogan ever had. Is that right?
He did have more at one point. But yeah, it's down to what it was just before he left.
You wouldn't think so, judging by the headlines, would you?
I know. And it's still obviously the biggest radio show in the UK. But we said this when the changes were announced, and I think everybody said this. When you change a massive breakfast show, especially the biggest one in the UK, you're going to get churn. You're going to get listeners going off and trying something else, especially at a time where we've got so many new stations and new breakfast shows that launched.
Exactly. Yeah. I think she's doing a great job.
I don't particularly listen that often, but when I do dip in, I think it sounds different to what it used to sound like, which is perhaps why some of the audience has churned. Greg James is doing very well. Another 180,000 listeners in the last year, just over 5 million for him now. And we saw the first figures in Q3 19 for Jamie and Amanda on Heart Breakfast Nationally as well. They debut with just over 4.5 million listeners a week, UK's biggest commercial radio show.
Which is bigger than the breakfast shows we're getting when they were local. Is that right?
I think it's gone up a little bit overall. And the Heart Network overall has increased its weekly reach as well. Obviously, again, these things take a little while to really settle down. So I think might be another 6 months, 9 months before we see the full impact of those local shows disappearing. But on the initial response, it doesn't like it's affected things too greatly.
Time will tell, as with anything.
Absolutely. And you were looking at the local figures around the UK in Rajars. And Greatest Hits Radio, some interesting figures. And Hits Radio in Manchester continues to kind of drop from what it was as Key 103.
To quote the late, great John Myers, if it was a dog, it would have been put down. And I'm talking about the Rajar figures for Greatest Hits, because Greatest Hits Radio, it's a great radio station, but the figures are just shocking. And this is because of the way Rajar works, of course. A year ago, Rock FM 2... which is the world's worst name for a radio station, actually had 75,000 people listening each week. And now it has 11,000. So are you telling me that in a year, 60,000 people have turned it off? I don't think so. They just can't remember the name of it. It's changing that often these days. That's why.
I mean, Greatest Hits Radio overall as a brand has added 100,000 listeners quarter on quarter. So it's going up, but it's those stations that have had a heritage name before that have changed away from that where we're seeing the decline, I think.
Yeah, so it's very difficult, because had they kept the name, they would have had even more listeners, because obviously they wouldn't have had the fallout on the radar. But it's same for Metro 2, it went from 87,000 to 24. Hallam 2, 133,000 listeners each week to just 32. There's literally 100,000 people difference. It's just bonkers. And I won't tell you what Radio Air 2 got.
As you say, people might still be listening to it. They don't just know what they're listening to when they're then ticking the Rajar diary.
And the guys at Bauer putting all this together must just be hands in their head wondering, what can we do? They've had so many attempts at this, and they finally think they've got it right. And then the audience at Rajar tells them it's no good. So I wouldn't like to be managing that.
And in London, here's an interesting one. Nick Ferrari's breakfast show on LBC in London is now the number one commercial radio breakfast show on reach, hours and share. And I think it's the first time ever that he's hit a bigger reach than Capital Breakfast in London. 813,000. That is crazy. It's ridiculous. He's jumped over Capital and Kiss in the last 12 months.
But what does that mean? The pop music stations did go down, and Nick kind of had the same audience he usually has. So it's not like he's had a massive jump. It's just the others have gone down as well, and they've met somewhere in the middle. But no, good on Nick. And I think it's the appetite. I don't know about appetite, but it's people wanting to hear, you know, talk on the radio, actual conversation, rather than just another 10 in a row. And also on the local stations, I did take an extra look at the Quidem stations, which are, of course, soon to become part of the West Midlands Capital Network. All the stations there have gone up.
Okay.
They're all about to be rebranded into Capital, and they've just had collectively one of their best ever radios, which is always the way, isn't it? I think the Bay went up and other stations that joined the global networks. It's always the way, isn't it? But you'll never know how it would go.
Here's a thing. From Radio 4 Breakfast to Classic FM Breakfast, John Humphrey's making his debut on Classic FM this week, covering for Tim Leoru.
Janine Jansen with Roman Ortego Cuero with the Janine Jansen Ensemble and the first movement of Bach's Concerto in C minor for violin and oboe. Coming up, my old friend John Suchet, great man. It's been a pleasure to be with you for the last 3 hours this morning. Wonderful music and no Brexit.
That's John Humphreys on Classic FM, sounding very at home this week, I thought. We talked last week about the Radio 1 treasure hunt feature that they were doing, where they were hiding golden tickets around the country. Well, it happened. I don't know whether it was supposed to go on a couple of days, but I think it only lasted, what, a couple of hours?
If that, yeah. Some guy got it within a couple of hours of the promotion starting. They had people all over the country, in England, Ireland, Scotland, Wales, waiting for people to come and find this golden ticket, and they were in a port-a-loo with an out of order sign on the outside, and somebody found it. But the guy who found it had this question that wasn't mentioned. Like, you had to say the last three digits of the Radio 1 phone number to be able to get the prize. So whilst this is going on, the guy stood behind him. He's googling the phone number in case his chance comes up. The guy who found the ticket didn't get it right, so he went to the next guy. He googled it, got the right answer, and won the tickets. Some people were saying that was very unfair.
Well, yeah, but that guy who found them, he was swearing all over the place as well.
Yeah, he didn't deserve them. You, Stevens, did say you're live on the radio, and then he comes out with a blooper. Terrible.
Hello, hello, hello. Okay, I need to tell you this, that you're live on Radio 1. Can I ask you a very important question?
Yeah.
Do you want to go to Glastonbury?
Fuck yeah, I do.
No, don't swear. I have to apologise for the strong language from the park here in the city centre. Do you want to go to Glastonbury without swearing?
Yeah.
Do you want to go to Reading and Leeds?
Yeah.
Do you want to go to Radio 1 Speak with Kent?
Yeah!
So, Roy, tell us about a new radio station coming to DAB in Glasgow, just announced this week, with a familiar voice for Scottish radio.
That's right. King of the Windups, north of the border, Robin Galloway, is doing breakfast on a brand new radio station called Pure Radio, not to be confused with Pure Radio or Pure Radio, or Pure Radio, in fact, that makes the things. He's launching at a unconfirmed date on Pure Radio in Scotland. It's going to be in Glasgow and Edinburgh. I think it's across the whole central belt, isn't it, on the central Scotland mucks. And he's going to be joined by Wave FM presenter Lynn Hogan on daytimes and Paul Harper on afternoon drive. And it's going to be like a full-service radio station for Scotland, run by the people at DC Thompson, which owns the likes of Kingdom FM, Original, and Wave FM as well.
Yeah, and we spoke to Adam Finlay, didn't we, on the podcast a few months ago, and one of the things they were talking about was the fact that they've not been able to get on DAB because of some of the markets they operate in. So this is them fighting back against Global and Bauer, I guess, and trying to get a bit of share from them.
Yeah, I mean, some people have commented saying, why don't they just put Kingdom FM on the DAB spot and expand that? I mean, I think Kingdom is going on DAB as well. But this is a whole new radio station from the guys at DC Thompson, which which are really growing in Scotland and one to watch.
We mentioned the election that's coming up. Obviously, there'll be lots of coverage of the election period and Purdah rules to get your head around and all that kind of stuff. Interesting to see that Brexit cast, which was formed out of the ashes of Election Cast last time there was an election, is going to bring back Election Cast. So Dino, the producer, has tweeted that there's going to be a daily Election Cast, Mondays, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and then the usual Brexit Cast on a Thursday and Election Cast on a Friday. It's big business. Brexit Cast, obviously really, really popular. So they're going to use the Brexit Cast feed and put out daily podcasts all during the week with election campaign updates.
It's fantastic. And Stuart, if I wanted a few bullet points on what I should be doing or shouldn't be doing on my radio station over the next 6 weeks, what would you say to them?
Well, have a look at the Ofcom rules. I don't know them all off the top of my head, but clearly a lot of it's about balance. So if you are covering the election, if you're in a local market, if you're a community radio station, and you are going to get somebody in to talk about themselves standing for election in the general election to be the MP, then you need to make sure you're representing all of the candidates across a certain period and make sure they're fairly represented and all that kind of stuff. So that's the most important thing. I mean, for a lot of areas, people don't want to hear that necessarily because there is going to be so much election coverage. So you might choose as a community radio station to say, we're not going to talk about the election, but, you know, put some stuff on your website. Here's the information. You can find it, who the candidates are and that kind of stuff. But yeah, there are important things like obviously, you know, making sure that any callers are checked before they go on air, that they're not candidates in the election or that they're not going to, you know, give you some disproportionate coverage or whatever. And you've got to make sure it's balanced up. But there is a really good Ofcom guide, and I'm sure some of the consultants who specialise in this kind of stuff will be putting some stuff out on Twitter as well, and we'll maybe get somebody on the podcast as we get nearer election time to give you an update on that as well.
So if I was the mid-morning presenter on 108.1 The Whale and I decided to run, then would I be able to host my radio show?
If you're standing to be a parliamentary candidate in the election, in the election period, you need to get yourself off the air. So, yeah, that's another thing for managers to make sure that that happens.
So the best thing to do is ignore it and carry on regardless. Just leave it to the news bulletin at the top of the hour to keep people up to date.
Well, you can do that, but, you know, yeah, it's great to, especially for community radio, if you do want to get your head around the rules and make sure that you're not going to fall foul of them, where we've seen in the broadcast bulletins in previous election campaigns, stations getting themselves into all sorts of trouble. If you read up on the rules, that, you know, make sure you're fair and appropriate and balanced, and not, you know, just letting the candidates come on and say whatever they want to say without challenge in terms of the accuracy of what they're saying and what they're saying about some of their rivals or their opposition parties, then, you know, get your head around the rules and do it, because it's, you know, that's what community radio is about. It's about empowering those local communities to get involved in decision making and that kind of stuff. So it's important to cover it, but make sure you do it right and within the rules.
And talking of community radio stations, it was the Community Radio Awards last weekend.
Ah, yes. Well done to all the winners. I presume there's a full list at radiotoday.co.uk. Am I right in making that assumption?
Without a doubt. Every single awards, it's all on there. Well done to Station of the Year All FM from Greater Manchester. Digital Station of the Year Radio 10? I don't know. You should know that, shouldn't we? I'm going to look it up, Radio 10. Okay. And also all the other winners as well. Everybody who even took part is obviously a winner, right? But those who got the big gold award, well done to you especially. And everybody who went had such a good report of the night and the Community Radio Now and Next conference that took place a few hours earlier at the weekend as well. All good stuff for community radio. Well done, everybody involved.
And the Student Radio Awards and the Audio Production Awards coming up in November. All the nominations for those at radiotoday.co.uk. It's less than a week now to get your entries in for the ARIAs, which are happening early 2020. And we must mention, events-wise, the Viamux workshops happening if you are interested in finding about small-scale DAB. A few of those have happened already. They're supported by Radio Today and Play Out One. They go to Sheffield on the 9th of November, Watford on the 10th, and Cardiff on the 23rd of November. Full details at viamox.com. And it's goodbye to James Cridland. He's doing his last regular audio blog for the Radio Today programme this week.
That is sad. I do enjoy listening to James tell us stuff every week on this very programme. So long may you continue with your pod news, James, and keep us up to date with everything on Twitter, of course.
Right, let's get on with it. We're going to hear about some tips for Brexit planning if you are working or running a business in the audio sector. That's on the way here on the Radio Today programme. Thank you, Roy. We'll talk in a couple of weeks because it's Roundtable week next week.
Ooh, look forward to that. Thank you, Stu.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creators of the Bionic Studio. Listening, watching, reacting to and learning from every spoken word, caller, tweet and SMS to unmix, unlock and understand your content. The Bionic Studio transforms everything about radio except the way you make it.
This is the Radio Today programme. Now, some highlights from the Brexit Ready podcasts made over the last week or so for Audio UK. Yes, there's a 3-month delay and now an election as well, but you could use the extra time available to make sure that you or your business is ready for Brexit when it comes. Presenter Georgie Frost has been talking to a variety of experts about what the audio and radio industry in particular needs to prepare for.
Andrew Hood has over 20 years' experience of working on the EU as a lawyer and negotiator. He worked for the UK government for 13 years, including for former Prime Minister David Cameron as general counsel. He now works in private practice and advises companies about EU regulation.
Just taking the audio industry, it's a services industry. So what will the situation be? What rights and regulations do you enjoy? And how easy is it to undertake your day-to-day business across the EU just by virtue of the free movement of services which we have at the EU level? When that stops, when the UK leaves the EU, what does that mean for this industry? What does it mean in terms of the people that are employed? Do you have a lot of EU nationals over here or Brits abroad? What does it mean in terms of their employment rights in those countries and in that context? All of that's still to be determined, but there's a lot of uncertainty for every industry that's out there. What do your contracts say about the arrangements you have in place with your customers? Does it talk about the EU as a whole? Is it about providing services across the EU? Will that then be impacted by Brexit, whether it's a deal or a no deal scenario? Really a whole range of different issues that need to be thought through for every industry, and the audio industry is no exception.
Alan Hunt is Managing Associate in the Brands and Intellectual Property and Commercial Teams for Lewis Silkin Law Firm. He specialises in the drafting and negotiation of commercial and technology contracts and the protection of IP assets.
You want to make a sound recording, a podcast, something today. The law in the UK says that, you know, the copyright owner will be the producer, the person who creates that sound recording. That copyright arises on creation. You own the rights, you can exploit the rights. Nothing in that process of creating copyright requires anything from the EU. Exactly the same for trademarks as well. So, you know, you have a brand to protect. You've created a new product. The name of your podcast, the name of your recording, whatever. From a territorial point of view is when we start to see those issues arising. So taking that brand name that might now be a UK protected right and using it across the EU, we start to run into potential difficulties, because as a member of the EU at the moment, you know, you might decide to apply for an EU trademark and get these harmonised rights across the whole market. When you're just trading in the UK and you just have a UK trademark, you're only going to get those rights in the UK.
And I guess the impact being cost.
Cost is a huge thing. So post-Brexit, nothing will stop a UK business applying for an EU trademark. But of course, that EU trademark will no longer include the UK. So it will have to apply for an EU trademark and a UK trademark. One of the things that we've been advising our clients to do for a while now in the lead up to Brexit date is to really take stock and do an audit of your IP rights, understand what trademarks you have in place, what gaps there might be, you know, work out, do I, you know, only have UK protection or do I have EU applications which are, you know, on foot and I need to get sort of reciprocal rights in the UK. Am I doing licensing deals across Europe of my content and need to think about, you know, how those deals are structured? And with the UK being outside of Europe, does that impact upon those licensing deals that I've reached and granted to people? a lot of questions have been around the scope of rights. So, for example, you're creating content and part of that content includes a number of third-party rights. I mean, all content does embody third-party rights to a certain extent. People are then raising questions about, well, if you know the UK is outside of the EU, do I have the rights to use that third-party content in my sort of broadcast or in my recording outside of the UK or similarly in other sort of, you know, jurisdictions? And the key thing there is to be looking at the grant of the rights you have. All of these sort of licensing deals are typically in written contracts, and it's about doing that assessment of, do I have the rights? What territories have I been granted those rights in? Do I have the necessary waivers? Have I told people that it might be for different markets? You know, once the UK is outside of the EU, it's important that we do treat it as a separate market.
John Kampfner is a respected journalist who used to be the chief executive of the Creative Industries Federation and is now a roving ambassador for them. The CIF is the national membership organisation for all the UK's arts, creative industries and cultural education.
There is a specificity around creatives and around people involved in tech. And it's this, that the vast majority, I mean, the stats are incredible. 95% of creative companies employ 10 people or fewer, and the average size of the creative company is 3.3 people. And you have this absolute army, therefore, of sole traders, of freelancers, and they haven't got a clue how to fill out forms. They haven't got time to be involved in bureaucracy and HR departments and this and that with different interior ministries and home offices. They just want to go places and do things. At the moment, we still have a visa regime that is weighted towards old-fashioned large companies that can do this kind of administration. But if you're a young 20-something French illustrator or a Canadian musician or blogger, you will go where you're most welcome and where the barriers to entry, both in terms of visa regimes, but also in terms of atmospherics, are the most benign. And Britain has always been in that category. And we need to make sure very much that not only we preserve it, but we enhance it in future.
Paul March is Audio UK's legal counsel. He's on hand to give members industry standard legal advice. He has nearly two decades of experience of working in the media and entertainment industry.
There is a possibility that in terms of its current impact, we might even be overstating it. If you look at UK audio producers, most of it operates within the United Kingdom. Mm. Most of the programming is for UK audiences made in the UK. So I think one can overestimate, if you like, the immediate impact of this. But going forward, and particularly when we do exit, assuming we exit, and the terms on which we exit, there will be far greater implications.
What does the EU currently do for the audio industry, or how linked are we to the EU? And therefore, how will it change?
I think one very interesting area that will change, and it's actually on the government's website on the briefing notes, is the country of origin principle, which effectively means that where you're a producer and you create a program in audio, but also audiovisual television, and that program is then distributed outside the UK, but it's carried via satellite, cable, online, you don't actually need a license to extend outside the UK. So there's a reciprocity. Effectively, Europe at the moment operates as a single economic space. No difference between being in New York or Michigan, between being in the United Kingdom and France in terms of the economic transfer of works. All of that falls away if we exit and there is then no deal. Mm. Now, that's not to say the British government wouldn't want to roll that over. We absolutely would want to roll that over because we are by far the greatest intellectual property producer in terms of programming in Europe. We wouldn't want to see these rules change, but there's no guarantee that the Europeans would allow us to roll it over. So at the moment, I'm a US producer and I license programming to the UK. And the UK, under EU rules, has the right to distribute that program in its form across the European Union, or at least to be accessed. Once we leave Europe, we won't have that right as a legal proposition. So I'm a US producer. I would say to the UK licensee, well, I don't want you distributing my programming across Europe because you're effectively appropriating economic value. I'd rather license it to RTE. I'd rather license it to a
Irish channel
or to the Dutch, who will have English language programming. It doesn't suit me to effectively have these rights bundled. By exiting Europe, whilst there are opportunities, we actually in some ways lose a framework to negotiate on the basis of that framework. Effectively, in non-legal terms, all bets are off.
Where do you think within our industry will be most affected then by potential changes?
Expanding it out, just not simply through programming, but to audio and music.
Mm.
Music tours are going to be humongously affected by this. For them, it's a massive change, because at the moment you've got free movement of people and goods, and all of that potentially, assuming there isn't this implementation period, and there will be an implementation period. And again, I don't, if one just takes a step back, the intention of the government during the implementation period would be to negotiate an FTA, free trade agreement.
Mm.
So the British government invariably would look as far as possible to continue with the same rights within the European space it already has. The chances are the Europeans won't allow that, because if we're going to have all the same rights without making the same payments, query how well that works for them. So you do have this tension. But you know, in terms of music tours, you're going to have much more paperwork. You're going to have for carnets, for goods. You're going to have work visas. You'll have social security payments. The fiscal rules might change as well on money transfers. And a lot of these things are quite marginal anyway.
David Thomas is a finance trainer who works with freelancers or small companies to help them manage their money better. He's been involved in radio and online productions for 30 years, mostly with the BBC, World Service and local radio.
First of all, paperwork is going to increase, a lot of paperwork. I was actually listening to an export specialist talking the other day who said, whether a hard or soft Brexit, we're going into a documentation world, which I thought was an interesting way of looking at it. I mean, all my training is about not wasting time on paperwork, so this kind of goes a bit against the grain. But
paperwork
it is,
specifically where?
Okay, moving yourself across borders, moving people across borders, and also moving equipment across borders. I think those are two obvious ones. We already know the very likely scenario in terms of what to think about just for anybody travelling to Europe, even before we talk about specifically working. But first thing is, make sure your passport has got at least 6 months on it. So that's the first very practical thing. Driving licenses. If you're going to drive anything, you might have to get an international driving permit. In fact, you certainly will. And there are two types. So which country will you drive in? Either hiring or even driving from the UK, perhaps to do some recording or production work somewhere else. There's an immediate implication there. So you need your own driving license from the UK plus an international driving permit. Are you taking your own vehicle? If you are taking your own vehicle, it needs a sticker on it, and the number plates don't count. So even though they have a Europe and GB sign, that's not good enough. It has to have a GB, big one, white one. So you've got to go and buy one of those. It needs a green card from the insurance company as well, which is just permission to take it overseas, and it will be insured to some extent. And that will take a few weeks to come. So you need to leave a month. So one of the things that struck me about all of this is that there'll be more paperwork, yes. So there's more to do. But you've also got to be better at planning. And quite a lot of decisions that people I meet who are freelance, they make quite last minute decisions about, you know, oh, let's go and interview this person and they're off on the next flight. I have met people where that's true, and they won't be able to do that in quite the same way.
Well, I mean, that's part of the news industry, isn't it? You can't dictate what's going to happen in breaking news, or if you have stories. Of course, that's the way creative industries often work. You go where the opportunities are when they arise.
So what I'm saying to people who freelance is, if you're a freelancer and you move around and you want your skills to be bought by people in the UK, and that might be to do with travelling overseas, make sure you've done all this first. And it's going to look quite attractive to somebody if they know it says on your CV you've got an international driving permit for whatever countries, or that you've thought about these things. The other thing that will happen at the end of next year is going to be a special visa waiver scheme for entry into European countries. I don't know if you've been to America recently, but you have to do...
3 weeks ago.
There you go. So you had to get, if it wasn't a business visa, you had to get an ESTA. An ESTA lasts for a few years, and it's a visa waiver online thing, and you do it 3 days at least before you travel. It costs you about, I think it's about $14 or something. Yeah. So that's already happening in America. The same thing will happen probably the end of next year for the EU. But of course, we're not part of the EU then, so it will apply to us. So it's called ETIAS. And people who are going to travel, tourists as well, but also going for business meetings and things like that, you would need an ETIAS.
Particularly with the visas, presumably, because it's the EU, you wouldn't need one per country.
Yes, you would.
You would need
because
one.
Because business, working in different countries is a country thing. So you might have some implications in one country and different implications in another. I mean, if you look at the costs of the things that we list here, and then you look at the processes of, you know, just getting it all sorted, to me, I think the big cost is the time and headache of getting it sorted. It is possible to envisage some sort of free trade agreement or something where a lot of what I've just said would still be true. So there may be an agreement about things that can be sold, goods that can be sold in certain ways, but that won't change anything I've just said. What I've just described is definitely no deal territory, but it is also very likely to be what happens. For example, the ETIAS, that's almost certainly going to have to happen anyway, because we won't be part of the EU. There's one other thing, though, which is important, and that's if you're taking equipment abroad. I think this is something which could impact on people. If you're going to work overseas and are taking professional equipment across borders, you don't have a problem doing that in the EU because there are no borders, effectively, to movement of people and goods. But once the UK isn't part of the EU, so that would be in a no-deal scenario, whether it's immediately or the end of the next year, then goods, by which I mean things like equipment, professional equipment, recording equipment, for example, is an obvious one. The other one that's quite a biggie is musicians touring. What do they do about the kit they've got to take with them? Well, what you'd have to do is you'd have to organise customs declarations. You would have to do that in advance. There's something which almost certainly is going to be the way people do it, which is called a carné, and it's effectively a sort of a passport for equipment. But you have to organise it in advance, and you have to pay for it, and you have to get it stamped on the way out, stamped on the way in, and then on the return journey, the same thing. I think that's going to be quite relevant for many of the people that I meet, because they've got recording equipment with them that they take with them, or they've got cameras. And that'll all have to be cleared through customs, and they'll have to have proper documentation to do it.
Steve Ackerman is the managing director of Something Else, one of the biggest independent production companies specialising in audio in the UK. They produce content for the BBC and many other commercial companies.
I think America has led the way in podcasting and in the growth of the podcasting industry, and we're probably 2 or 3 years behind that curve. But there's no doubt about it that there is a huge amount of interest from non-audio companies in audio and in podcasting. And so I think if you have an entrepreneurial mindset, regardless of how large or small your business is, that's clearly going to throw up opportunities for you. There are lots of people who are willing to back, whether that's financially or in other ways, good ideas, good creativity, or ideas that they think can resonate not just in the UK, but beyond the UK as well. It helps everybody in the UK audio industry if the UK audio industry is a world beater and is doing well. Obviously, Something Else would benefit, but clearly everyone else would as well. And so I want the UK audio industry to be as ambitious as possible. And I'm not sure yet that enough UK audio producers are quite recognising the opportunity that's literally staring them in the face, which is for their ideas to be exploited in many different ways, and for them to travel beyond the UK and create revenues for them in other territories.
A lot of the emphasis when we are talking about Brexit has been naturally and understandably around sort of business and economics. And what's worth highlighting, and I think you've done it really well, is we're called the creative industry for a reason. It would be such a shame if people were holding back over fears of what may or may not happen.
Well, at the heart of creativity is risk-taking. It's such a key component of being able to come up with good ideas, or to, you know, to have the ambition for those ideas. And unfortunately, uncertainty hinders risk-taking. And it's, I think, completely understandable that if you're a business, you pause on decisions you might make or decisions you think are risky because of uncertainty. And when that then starts affecting creativity, that clearly gets to the heart of what our business is about. And so that clearly can't be a good thing. So as far as I'm concerned, the quicker there's a more certain direction, whichever way that may go, the better.
I also want to ask about the opportunities in language reversioning.
Language reversioning is really interesting. It was only a few months ago that Wondery, one of the biggest US producers, announced that they were going to be diving into this space in quite a significant way. And they've already turned a few of their podcasts now into multiple languages. We have certainly seen that opportunity. There is a particular interest for turning podcasts into Spanish language, both because of obviously South America and also Spain itself, which, I mean, Spain's podcast listening numbers or the percentage of the population who are listening on a regular basis to podcasts is higher than the UK. So the Spanish market is a very interesting one. Clearly, the challenge, again, probably goes back to a slightly creative question of how you do it, and it depends on the style of podcast. You know, is it where you're just going to lay voices over the top? Are you going to completely recreate the podcast with a whole new cast? If it's more of a studio-based podcast, do you just take the format and reversion it into another language? Lots of different ways to do it, but I do think, again, these are opportunities that anyone who's sitting on a podcast that has decent audience numbers, they should be thinking about this now.
How do you think, looking at the medium term, that the podcasting market will develop, and where do you see the direction of travel a little bit further down the line?
Even if you'd have asked me six months ago, would I expect, certainly for our business, to be seeing the opportunities that are coming now, 6 months forward? I would have never predicted that. And certainly what might be ahead in the next 12, 18, 24 months, I think is impossible to predict, aside from the fact that there is very rapid growth going on now. There is plenty of statistical evidence showing that the audience is growing very rapidly. But what's interesting is in all the major markets, only between 20 and 30% of the audience are listening on a weekly basis. They are listening voraciously into a lot of podcasts, and the growth is very, very aggressive. But clearly what that means is there's a huge amount of the population still to go. And that clearly should be seen in an optimistic light, in the sense of massive growth for the entire industry.
That was Steve Ackerman finishing off some of our advice for preparing for Brexit. Still to come on the Radio Today programme, James Cridland and also David Lloyd's Radio Moments. First, a word about CleanFeed. It's a great way to connect in decent quality at low cost. If you're doing an OB or getting a guest onto your show or podcast to interview them, or maybe co-hosting from different places around the world, CleanFeed's been designed for radio people and for podcasters, and it's really simple to connect in live quality audio just using a web browser. You can even record within the browser as well. CleanFeed won't cost you anything to get started. It'll just take 30 seconds to sign up, and within minutes you'll be doing your first live interview or recording. Find out more about it at cleanfeed.net.
I'm James Cridland, the radio futurologist. A lot has happened since November 2014. At the time, I was working in the roof, quite literally. My office space was in a room that was so illegal, when I bought the house, they weren't allowed to call it a room. The window gave a view of the rooftops of North London suburbia, a view past some lovely trees which some joyless bureaucrat cut down, over to a park, and beyond it, Enfield, a little country town that had inexplicably ended up rather too close to the rest of London. It was in this tiny room where I was sent an email from a nice man asking me to start writing a column for a radio website. And I've written a column every single week since then, and produced a podcast version for a few years too, which you're listening to right now. And I've managed to do this every week, almost, in spite of moving 10,000 miles from that room in North London to a slightly sunnier room in Brisbane in Queensland, Australia, where the radio dial is the same but different, and where as long as I have internet, I can still enjoy almost every radio station on planet Earth. Along the way, people have told me that radio was dying and sniggered a little at my radio futurologist title, but here we are 5 years later, with radio seemingly as popular as ever. That Nielsen figure still looks healthy in the US, GFK still looks good in Australia, Radar's good in the UK, although each of them is showing some signs that radio is being kept alive by older listeners. And when our audience starts dying, they'll do so literally. We've also seen audio being part of our world more than ever before. Podcasting is capturing people's imagination. Perhaps the level playing field that podcasting offers has led to a rediscovery of the types of things that audio can do, from complex audio drama to interviews that are given space to breathe. Podcasting too has led to a pivot of sorts for me, because I continue to speak about radio's future, but my days are now filled more with audio's on-demand future as well, editing Pod News, a daily free newsletter about podcasting and on-demand. I've now written almost 5 years of these columns. Some of them have been carefully researched over a couple of days, some typed hurriedly at 11 o'clock at night, and some I've been quite proud of. At a conference last week, I was struck by how many people came up to me and told me that they read these columns every week. And that's a lovely thing to say, but something I'm unlikely to hear again, because this is my last. I've worked in radio for over 30 years now, so I doubt it'll ever go away. And of course, I'll still write about radio. I have a free weekly radio trends newsletter at james.crit.land. And Pod News is a daily newsletter at podnews.net if you really want more of me. Radio is something that touches 9 out of 10 people every week, keeps them company, and makes a positive difference to their lives. So, don't forget how much people love what you do. And keep listening. And now on the Radio Today programme, I get to do this one more time. Here's David Lloyd. Radio
Moments. If there's any such thing as a presenter's presenter, it's probably Roger Scott. Roger died this week 30 years ago, aged 46. He was best known for his Capital work, where he spent 15 years before joining Radio 1. And it all started in America. WPTR. Much more music.
1540. Scott Show playing so much more than the fellas next door. Mr. Dynamite James Brown here in his famous flames, and money won't change you.
Really, I've had a most fantastic 8 months, and I hope you all wish me luck. I'm off to Montreal on Monday. I'm going up there on Monday afternoon, and I'm going to start work up there next Thursday. I hope you all wish me luck.
The definitive Burt Bacharach Hal David medley there from the Carpenters. Really nice. 9:29, UBN safety first time on a rather cloudy and sort of damp Thursday morning. I don't know if you got home in time last night to watch the end of that Benson and Hedges.
Everybody goes through that. You want to sound like Steve Wright. You want to sound like Simon Bates. You want to sound like Kenny Everett. You want to sound like Roger Scott. You want to sound like Tony Blackburn. Everybody goes through all that. But the secret is, come out of it at the other end, having discovered yourself. Capital.
4:07. Came in this morning, sat down, opened my letters. First thing I do in the mornings, love getting letters. I bet a lot of people think I don't actually read them. You think I've got teams of secretaries opening them all. But I actually really do enjoy reading letters myself when they come in. And I opened one this morning and a £5 note fell out. And there was a little note with it. And I thought I ought to read you this for anybody who thinks the younger generation are a terrible mess. A £5 note, right?
Roger Scott, who died this week 30 years ago. Talking of Capital, after a weekend outing, Capital Gold became a fully-fledged AM oldies station this week in 1988.
David Hamilton, a little gold nugget on 1548 AM.
That's me, folks. Good morning, and welcome to the David Hamilton Music Show on Capital Gold. Yeah, I think it's fair enough to call that a classic. Number one in the summer of 1967, Procol Harum and A Whiter Shade of Pale. It was a record that they never really equaled, although they did come up with some other good tracks like Homburg and Conquistador.
Capital Gold, which went full-time on Capital's AM frequency this week 31 years ago. When tragedy strikes, radio now may not be the first medium to break the news, but when it becomes hugely valuable is how it responds afterwards. This week last year, the helicopter crash which killed the chairman of Leicester City Football Club and 4 other people.
Outside the King Power Stadium, which just a few hours ago was bustling with noise and thousands of people here to watch Leicester City record a 1-1 draw with West Ham United. Now, for those who don't know, every single week, every single home game, after the game, the Leicester City owner's helicopter lands in the centre of the pitch, picks up the owners and takes them to wherever they need to be, whether that be their place in London or to...
We would normally come on air and tell you about the games we can look forward to seeing in the show. This, though, is no ordinary Saturday.
You know, previous chairman tried to move Alan Birchnell, the Leicester City legend, on and maybe away from the club. Cumbershire gave him a job for life to stay at this football club because of what he represents and represented. And that emotion that he's carrying is raw, and it's difficult because he was a leader. That's the Birch we're talking about. So he knew him intimately. It's going to be very, very difficult for this football club to move on. Birch, are you all right, buddy?
Yeah, you're right, Birch. Sorry.
No, you're all right, mate. You're all
right. Yeah, sorry.
He's a good bloke.
He's just one of the lads. He come down, you know.
Radio Leicester on the scene this week last year, and as I recall, Capital was live from there the morning after as well. When the Today programme was born, then heard on the BBC Home Service, it was a rather different animal. Topical Talks, they called it. The programme was afterwards refocused and hardened and cut in half, and in the 1970s nearly disappeared altogether. The first edition was heard this week in 1957. But even after 62 years, things don't always go according to plan.
Oh, she's gone.
I'm not.
Emily Kent, you there?
After saying that about wood pigeons and depressing us all.
I hope I didn't offend her. Oh, that seemed like a huge increase, doesn't it? 1,000%.
It does. They're everywhere and they will eat just about anything. At least it looks to me as if they'll eat just about anything.
Well, I'm afraid she has gone. Anyway, that was Emily Kent while we were talking to her, and we were talking about. Oh, she's back. No, she's back. Emily, are you there?
No.
No.
No, she's not. No. I wonder whether Richard Conway's there, whether he is, because he's at Aintree, and I'm just hoping.
Can he talk about birds for a few minutes?
Has been eaten by a wood pigeon or something. he might be there, but I don't know, because I'm not being told of fun.
No, you're not there. No, he's not there either. Well, we'll keep trying to get hold of Emily Ketchum.
All right. Well, what's your view? Let's get.
Should we talk
really
about wood pigeons?
Down and dirty. Yeah. What is your view of wood pigeons?
Well, I like them actually.
Do you? They waddle.
I like the sound of them. I like the sound of them. And that 1,000% increase. I could tell you some of the other.
Yeah, but they drive away lots of other nice birds. You see, really, really nice birds like blackbirds. Well, the blackbirds seem to survive.
What's going to happen now is you're going to show off with your rural knowledge and make me seem.
No, this
like
is
like a metropolitan.
I tell you,
I've got birds in my garden.
This is a good time for birds, isn't it? Blackbirds, especially. Favorite bird, Justin. Favorite bird. I'll tell you what mine is. Blackbird. Favorite bird.
Yeah. I quite like owls, actually. Not that we have many in South London.
Fascinating
thing.
You don't have blackbirds in South London?
No, owls.
Owls! Well, no, of course you don't have owls, because, you know, owls get kind of little. Oh, look, somebody's just walked into the studio. How exciting. Would you like to talk about birds, chaps? Or you don't have to.
They look suitably bemused. We're
discussing. Well, I'm not surprised you look so. We are suitably bemused as well, because.
We still haven't found her. We're having this conversation. Can I just explain? Anyone who's turning on now and thinking
we'll be baffled.
They've finally completely lost it, or maybe John has.
And that goes on and on. Happy birthday to the Today programme, born this week in 1957. So, with Radio West launching in Bristol 38 years ago.
Yes, it's me, Nino, and you can join me every weekday morning on Radio West from 6 o'clock.
A fond Danny Baker farewell from Radio London 7 years ago.
Good afternoon, everybody. On the very final show up here in the Treehouse, they've cancelled us for financial reasons.
Dan, you know, I was thinking about this. Aren't you also DJ of the Year in perpetuity?
It's going to. This is not about me. indeed. And as I say, it'd be nice if they'd have rung us up.
Can you remind me?
Commercial radio coming to Ipswich 44 years ago.
Oh, well. Number one.
And Global taking control of all the GCAP brands 11 years ago. Those are this week's Radio Moments.
Thank you, David and Roy, and for the final time, James Cridland, and to Georgie Frost, producer Charlotte North, and David Prest from Whistledown for the interesting takes on how our industry might be affected by Brexit. Next week, Trevor Dan is back with the Radio Today Roundtable for November.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics.
The original music for this podcast was composed by Mikasa.